are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Yep, California.
California. What part of California?
Southern California, Riverside.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I went to school at Cal Poly Pomona.
Okay, yeah.
Are you from the, Riverside?
No, not originally. I'm actually from the East Coast.
Virginia. Oh, okay. I assume that you came here because of the United States Air Force?
Yep. So did a transfer out here, and that was back in 2010.
Yeah.
Active duty Air Force out here.
How do you like it in California?
I love the weather.
Yeah.
The weather's great. Lots to do out here.
Yeah. What part of the East Coast were you from?
Virginia.
Virginia. I've never been to Virginia, I don't think.
It's not too bad. I don't miss the humidity or the snow.
Yeah.
Sure.
I know California. I'm a California boy. And I tell you what, it's getting difficult to be in California at the moment.
Yeah. Getting a little crazy out here.
It really is. And sure. It makes me sad because I really do like California. I like other places too, but I don't know. Like you said, the weather's hard to beat here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I love the weather. I love the beaches. It's just the politics and the economy.
I know. The election needs to be over. All this, most of this will probably go away. Hey, AKA OG. Okay, you're not an old guy. What the hell is that?
They call me the OG, the original gangster.
Oh.
Because I'm the first natural Olympian champion of the men's physique category when they introduced it that year.
Oh, really?
So I won that back in 2012.
Oh, okay. Yeah, when I saw that and I saw you, I'm thinking of me, old guy. They call me OG sometimes, but it's not because I'm an original gangster. I'm an old guy.
Yeah, no, totally different meaning.
Sure. Hey, well, listen, welcome to Serious Growth Podcast. One of our missions, if you will, on the show is just to say it like it is, tell the truth, even if it's unpopular. So don't hold back, because I'm not going to. Okay, so the United States Air Force, what made you get in? What made you want to be in the military, but in particular the Air Force?
I like to consider myself smarter, so I was able to join the Air Force. Nothing to pick on the other branches. But two main reasons I wanted to join the military in the first place was, one, I grew up as an Army brat. I moved around everywhere. My dad was in the Army. He was a military policeman for many years. So I grew up in that lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
That he was. Great respect and admiration for my father, the military, and kind of following in his footsteps. And also, another main reason I wanted to join the military was so my parents didn't have to pay for my college tuition fees.
Okay.
So 100% college paid for, joining up with the military. So that was the primary reason for joining.
And how old were you when you joined?
Straight out of high school, so 18.
No kidding. And I would imagine that because of the fact that your parents were in the military, that there was sort of some sort of regiment or discipline, just because you were in that family environment, I would imagine that you had to live life probably a little bit different than most kids, would you say?
I had to deal with the punches. I mean, I moved around a lot. It was like clockwork. Every 2 years I was somewhere else, different school, different state. I met a lot of interesting people. Didn't get too attached to them because I knew it wasn't going to last long.
Yeah.
But yeah, I grew up a little bit, I would say, more strict than other kids did.
Mm-hmm.
Mind my P's and Q's, very respectful towards adults, everything like that.
Yeah. How did that impact you? I can relate to you only in a very small way, moving around. It wasn't because I was in the military, it's because my parents were divorced when I was at the age of 5. And for the first, I guess, from 5 to 8 years, maybe 9 years of age, I was constantly moving from school to school. You know, it wasn't where I was moving. I don't know if you moved to another state, you probably were moving like far away. but how did that impact you as far as, I know you were already saying that you didn't really attach yourself to people. I guess that was just something, as I would imagine, that's a protective mechanism to a degree, you know, not to get too close because they're not going to be there in a couple of years. But how did that impact you otherwise, or did it?
No, yeah, it most definitely did. Again, I wouldn't develop close relationships with friends. I would say they were more friendly acquaintances.
Yeah.
It was hard to, I moved to a bunch of different states, just different cultures in different states. Yeah. Especially like I went to large cities, where there was a, you know, very diverse demographic. There was a huge Asian population, which I fit into very well. And then I've been to very rural, small cities, schools, where it was primarily just a bunch of white kids, and I was like the only Asian there. So definitely different. Again, hard to, you know, join a group of friends or a clique or a club or anything like that.
Yeah.
I was just kind of in the middle and, you know, didn't really attach myself to anything.
Yeah.
When I start my own family, I like my kid to actually not move around as much as I did. Actually grow up with the same, you know, friends and family and establish that community relations. So
I know with me, it was, you know, I did better when I did settle down. I went to live with my dad at about 9 or 10 years of age. It was more stable there that way. And I agree with you. I mean, I like the fact that one of the upsides, if there's an upside to moving around all the time, is I had friends all over the town, you know, and where I was, I had friends everywhere because, you know, I went to different schools and, you know, that was kind of cool. But I think that humans in many ways, just especially kids, they need a routine. And I think that's what's so troubling right now with the kids that can't, they're not getting into school. I think that's just a big disruption because of that routine that you're talking about, developing relationships. That's part of us developing as a human being.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and when you're dealing, not, you know, have that, especially when you're young, it's got to make it a different dynamic. It's tougher. I can relate to you a little bit, I think, in that respect.
All right, let's take a quick break so I can tell you about our product.
Do you want a bone-crushing grip? Good, because you're going to get one with the amazing new TRS Gripper. It's a progressive grip builder with longer handles and a special ergonomic design that's like a dozen hand grippers in one. Start off easy and work your way up to quickly build your grip strength from wet noodle to pulverizing. The package includes a video from the world-famous strength coach, Dr. Russ Horine, the man who worked with Leo Costa to help bring you Big Beyond Belief in the Bulgarian Power Burst. Dr. Horine shows you a simple and easy to follow workout plan that takes just minutes a day right from in front of your TV set if you want. So click on the link below and let's get started building you a stronger, firmer, bone-crushing grip.
What about culturally? I know that you were, you know, I married somebody, my second wife is from Europe, from Holland. Okay. And what's really interesting about that is the cultural differences. And did you find that, you're Asian American, is that right?
Half Korean.
Oh, half Korean, okay. So did you find it that even though you're, I'm assuming you're born and raised here in the States, was there any kind of a cultural, would you say a barrier or to something that was, you know, that you had to overcome?
For sure. I mean, my mother's Korean. Again, me moving around, like I said earlier, I went to large schools where there was a huge Asian population, so I could fit. I fit right in.
Yeah.
No questions asked, nothing strange about it. And then I went to smaller schools where I was the only Asian.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of bullying and getting picked on and everything just because I was different.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I primarily look Asian. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say I look closer to white. I'm not I take after my mom than I do my dad. Mm-hmm. So even when I am with those Asian friends, Asian groups of people, they expect me to know the culture. They expect me to actually know the language. And I don't speak a lick of Korean. Yeah. So,
does that make you a bad guy in your culture?
Doesn't make me a bad guy. It makes my parents a bad guy. My parents' fault.
Oh, way to go.
But
that's funny. How did you handle that bullying? I mean, you know, when I was growing up, it was much different. Bullying was just a part of the process of growing up. I mean, it wasn't like, it wasn't handled because so much is made of bullying now, you know? And I don't know how I feel about that. I feel for someone who gets bullied legitimately, but I think that, but that's like, get over it, you know, do something that gets you over that, deal with it. It's life kind of.
Exactly. I don't like this victim mentality where people are running towards their parents or other people or complaining. Yeah. I grew up being bullied. Just roll with it. Yeah. And pretty much sports helped out a lot.
I was just going to tell you that, you know, with me, it was about being a really good athlete and standing out like that and saying, it was like, screw you, you know, bully me if you want.
Yep. Joining football, baseball helped out. Yeah, it was just about being a good player. And they kind of accept you then and just forget all about race.
Exactly. Isn't that, it's amazing. And that's one of the things I like about sport, because it really does bring people, all different kinds of cultures together. You know, when I played ball, I played a lot of black guys and a lot of, you know, just different races and all that kind of stuff. And we all got along, man. I mean, it was like a family. You fight and all that stuff, but that's normal. Yeah. But it just changed that whole, you know, the dynamic of that, which that's one of the things I liked about sport.
Right. Yeah. And you can't take anything personally. And again, it's great for character development, I think.
I don't think it's a bad thing necessarily. I think it's the way you perceive it. It's the way you handle that. Because isn't life just full of ups and downs and adversity? And it's not, you know, it's how you handle that, you know, instead of letting it destroy you, let it define you in some way.
Right, exactly.
And I don't think just my opinion. I just don't think that kind of stuff is really happening. Now, in school, you said you were in sports. What kind of sports did you play in school?
I played football and baseball.
Okay. And did you go on to, you said you went on to, of course, out of high school, you went right to the Air Force. So where were you based then out of high school?
Out of high school, after basic training and tech school, I actually joined the Air National Guard. Okay. And joining the Air National Guard, it was, you know, 1 week in a month, 2 weeks a year. Yeah. And that allowed me to attend school full time.
Okay.
So still attending school full time. I went to West Virginia University. My base was the Martinsburg Air National Guard, which is in West Virginia. And I was stationed there for the first four, six years. Can't remember exactly. And then I moved to a gas station in Ohio, and then I joined active duty over here in California, and been doing that ever since.
So when you're in the U.S. or in the Air Force, what is it that you do in the Air Force?
It's called Security Forces, which is military police for the Air Force.
So military police, is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay. Now, are you going to be in the Air Force? Like, is it going to be a career for you? Have you made that a career? Or are you going to be coming out and becoming like a policeman or something in security?
No, actually, it's looking like it's going to be a career for me. I've already been in 13 years now.
Yeah.
I can retire at 20 years. And then I can either continue or just figure it out from there. But right now, it's a career move for me.
Do you love your job?
It has its ups and downs, but I love what I do, absolutely.
And do you what's your work day look like? Is it like a normal 9-to-5?
No, absolutely not. It changes constantly too, depending on the situation. Like because of the COVID thing right now, we're working 12-hour shifts. Mm-hmm. Our schedule rotates every few months or so. Mm-hmm. It depends on the situation. Our manning changes constantly, where we had to have too many personnel or not enough personnel, so we have to adjust accordingly.
So what does your job actually look like? You said you're in the military, right? The police side of it. So what does that mean in the Air Force? What's your job to do?
I protect personnel and property on the installation. So just like any law enforcement officer, I patrol the base. I secure the, you know, the aircraft's resources that we have. I mean, they're multi-million dollar resources that we have to secure. But yeah, just like any other law enforcement, I perform law enforcement duties.
Okay. And you get a couple days off a week?
A couple days off a week. Yep.
What do you do for fun?
I work out. That's it. I like hanging out in my garage gym and work out.
Now, did you have to go to a garage gym because of COVID, or have you always trained in your garage?
No, I've had my garage gym past 4 years now.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, it's my go-to. I primarily train out of my garage. I've been doing that for the past 4 years. Mm-hmm. I am a member of a couple gyms, but I go there just when friends want to work out with me, or if I decide I want to change the scenery.
Yeah.
This is my primary gym. Getting ready for all my shows right out of here.
So do you work out with training partners at all?
Yes, I do. When possible. Again, my schedule is always, it's all over the place, but when possible, I like to train with someone.
Yeah. I always liked having training partners. For those days that you just don't have quite that motivation to get over that hump, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but most of my training sessions, it was a love-hate-hate relationship doing my training, because it was I was attracted to the sport of bodybuilding because it was so damn hard. It's just a mindset that I have, you know, always been like that. It's that was appealing to me. I just didn't realize how damn hard it was going to be to create a physique that's world-class level. It's you know, it's a difficult thing to do.
Yeah, it's definitely not easy. I would say a lot more mental than physical. A lot of times, especially working the 12-hour shifts, I'm just exhausted from work. But I know I got to do it.
Yeah. And
I don't want to botch this quote up, but a quote Mike Tyson says, doing something that you hate like you love it. Mm-hmm. So that's me with bodybuilding. I don't always want to do it every day. I'm exhausted. I'd rather take a nap as soon as I get home.
You're right.
But I do it because I love it, and I know I have to do it.
Yeah.
And it's part of my routine.
Like I said, it was a love-hate-hate relationship, but the love, you know, at the end of the day outweighed it, man. I was addicted to that thing, you know, to the point. You've been doing it, what, 4 years?
No, I've been competing since 2010.
Okay, so 2010, all right. And where are we? Oh, so about 10 years, really.
Yeah.
Okay. And yeah, it became something, and I'm obsessed with it, you know, when I was involved in all that kind of stuff. But what a commitment that you have to make when you really make that full commitment. How did you learn about how to train for what you do? You competed in the physique?
I started off in bodybuilding because that was the only category available for men back then. Mm-hmm. Then I transitioned over into men's physique.
And why did you go the physique route?
Actually, one of my friends. So the physique category was introduced in the NPC back in 2011. And then I had a couple friends that was going to compete for the first time in that category, and they just asked me to join them.
Mm-hmm.
So I went ahead and prepped, and I had no clue what the category was about. I just knew that you wore board shorts. That's it.
Yeah.
And then I ended up doing very, very well at that first show and just fell in love with it. I felt it suited my physique a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a very big guy. So, and I like the style of men's physique. And then I just kept doing well at shows, and I just continued on with it.
What's the main difference between the men's physique category and bodybuilding?
It's a whole different look. Honestly, I would say men's physique is a little, originally when it started out, it was supposed to be a more attainable physique. a little bit softer, not as hard and grainy as bodybuilders, not as conditioned. That's no longer the case now. I mean, you can see physique guys that are basically bodybuilders in board shorts. Mm-hmm. And then there's the board shorts where we don't show off the legs. It's basically an upper half competition. But there is a look to it, I believe. You got to have the beach boy look. You got to have the model look. Mm-hmm. Nice smile, good hair. And posing is very important too. You got to stylize it.
So that's all part of the end result. Is you're making some interesting points. You have to have a model, a certain look, and that includes a certain face, how you look, and you know how you smile, how you look. But what about training your lower body? Do you still pay attention to training your lower body, even though you don't have to show that?
Oh, absolutely. You still got to train your lower half, and I love leg day. Well, it's like you said, it's a love-hate relationship with leg day, but I still train it just as hard as I would if I was competing in bodybuilding. Mm-hmm. There's no change there. And I feel like if you want to have a good upper body, you got to train your lower half. You got to train your legs.
Have you heard of a guy named Tom Platz by chance?
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah. Tom was a big believer. He did a story one time. I trained with Tom back in the early 90s. And they asked him one time, you know, of course he had massive legs, and what, you know, his upper body usually was more behind than his legs. And they asked him in one interview how he brought his chest up from one year to the next. And he said, I trained legs more. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about a little bit. To get that, to train legs, it takes so much energy to train them right that you get an indirect effect to the rest of the body, right?
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. Again, legs, largest body parts on the body, especially with squats, deadlifts, you're going to have the greatest output of testosterone, growth hormone. So if you want the rest of your body to grow, you got to do legs.
Yeah. And I wonder how prevalent that is, that mindset that you have. Would you say that you can tell when you're competing against other guys in your category that they don't have that mindset of training legs?
Yeah, I think they're very grateful for men's physique category and that they hide their leg development with board shorts.
Yeah. I have to tell you, when I retired from the sport the first time, well, my only time I retired, but and I came back 13 years later because I was curious. If I basically came back to see if muscle had memory, legit, you know? And of course it does. But anyway, when I came back and I competed in my first show back, we didn't have all these categories that they had when I came back. It's like board, bikini. I mean, oh my goodness. I did a show in Pittsburgh as a national show. It took 2 days to do the damn show. There were so many competitors, and men's bodybuilding was actually the smallest group.
Yeah, it's gotten out of hand, I think. They just keep adding more and more categories. But yeah, it used to be just men's bodybuilding, and then now we got like 4 or 5 different categories just for the men. And the women, you have even more categories to get into.
Yeah. Now, did you compete in the IMBA? I think you did, right?
Yep. I'm exclusively with the IMBA.
Okay. Yeah. And then of course I don't know if I saw you in Vegas, but that was our first. I've been out of the industry for a while. I wrote a lot of books back in the day. And so getting back into this thing was podcasting was the one way that I could get information out again. You know, I'm at an age now, right? I don't want to go in the gym and train and show my, you know, my results from all my training. I still train, but I'm just an old guy having fun compared to the way I used to train. I want to keep it that way. But so what I had to offer is information from all the years. You know, you'll be the same way. You're 10 years in. When you have 15 or 20 years like me, I got 38 years underneath my belt now. You'll be amazed at how much you'll learn and how much you still have to learn if you stay a student of the game. And I got a feeling that you probably will. But the IMBA was just amazing what I saw there with all those categories. And I thought it was an interesting concept in the way they ran that.
Yeah. The shows are getting bigger and bigger every year, and a lot more categories are being introduced. I think there's a new category being introduced this year as well. But Yeah, it was a great show. The Natural Olympia is always a fantastic show. It's an international competition, so yeah. You meet athletes from all over the world. So it's a great time.
Is that the only one? Now, the Olympia is the bigger one, the biggest one they have, right? Have you competed in some other ones that they have around the world or around the country?
Yeah, actually, last year was my first time that I competed internationally. I went to Australia.
Okay, how'd you do?
I won, so. Yeah, great experience. I love Australia. Went there on my honeymoon. And I love the people there, so.
Do you know Ken Ross? I'm sure you do.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Actually, he was the show host.
Okay.
It was his show.
Yeah, Ken seems to know everybody.
Yeah, it does.
I did a podcast with him, and I could just tell, even like in Vegas, I mean, everybody knew him. Everybody was walking around. Everybody knew Ken Ross. Okay. I found out why. The guy is really knowledgeable, and he's been around. He's worldly, that's for sure.
He competes at every show.
Yeah.
He competed in many shows.
Yeah, I can't believe how many times, like, a lot of the people that compete in the IMBA and that organization that you're in, it's amazing how many times they actually compete in a year. I mean, when we were competing, it was like 2-3 competitions, and that was about it.
Yeah, that's all I could do. I mean, 2-3 competitions a year, that's max.
Yeah.
It takes a toll on the body. It's hard to maintain your conditioning from show to show, too.
You said you're married. Does your wife support all this, I assume?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It doesn't become too extreme for her, like too much, you're spending too much time on yourself?
She says that every day. Yeah. ever since we started dating, I mean, yeah, just a few months into our relationship, she drove out to Reno for my very first Olympia back in 2012. And she's been supporting me ever since.
Did she play a role besides just being a support? I've had, you know, my first wife was kind of supportive. Second wife was, because she competed, she understood it in a different way, you know, because it does. I mean, I don't know about you, but with me, I have this, when I get into something like this, it becomes so about me. It makes me sick, you know, at certain points, you know, because I think it just kind of, if you're going to be really good at something like that, you got to get all consumed, but it takes its toll on relationships sometimes. And does your wife play a role in maybe that she preps your meals, or is she just that there to support you?
She's definitely there to support me, but I would say she's my unofficial coach.
Oh.
Yeah, she doesn't sugarcoat anything. She doesn't constantly tell me that I look good or anything. She actually puts me down a lot, which
so she's, I guess, not, she's not your yes man, huh?
No, absolutely not. Yeah, she could be mean. But she has a good eye for the sport. She knows what to look for. She has my posing. Tells me when I look good, don't look good. Compares my current physique to previous physiques. So, yeah, she helps me out a lot. But she never sugarcoats anything, which I need, because everyone will tell you, "Hey, you look great, man."
Oh, yeah.
Like that, and my wife will just take me from cloud nine and just put me up right under.
Yeah. So how did she become, does she work out herself?
Not as intensely as I do, for sure. I mean, just typical stuff, nothing extreme.
Yeah. So are you saying that she just has a natural eye for the aesthetics of what you do? How does she develop that? How does she become your unofficial coach? Because, you know, not just anybody can become an unofficial coach or even a coach.
No, just through years of experience with me. Mm-hmm. Because I'm constantly doing research, I'm constantly watching videos of competitions, and she's right there beside me. So she's right there. All the competitions that I've been in, she's usually there.
Mm-hmm.
So she watches everything.
Yeah.
And she sees what the judges are looking for.
You know, it's very different in the time that you're competing, because like when I was competing, there was no YouTube. And I'm amazed that I've interviewed quite a few people in the sport now, and it's amazing how some have learned the whole thing from YouTube. They watch YouTube and they're able to apply that, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah.
All we had were magazines, you know, and the thing with magazines, which again, I guess you could say that for YouTube as well, but a lot of this information in the magazines was not exactly what they were saying. It was, you know, I learned that the hard way back then. But yeah, it's amazing that, I mean, I guess that in that sense, YouTube has been a really something that has been really beneficial for people, you know, that are competing like yourself, because that, it is valuable if you can find somebody that's giving you some good information.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so much information available.
Yeah.
So you just gotta, you gotta see what works best with you. I mean, you can try different programs, you can try different diets, but that's what you need to do. You need to try different things out and see what works best for you.
Yeah. That's an interesting thing about this sport. And this is a reason why most people who get into this don't end up on stage, because you have to be willing to test and trial. And, you know, you have to be willing to make a commitment to eat a certain way. I'll just tell you what happened with me. Eat a certain way, train a certain way for the next show that I'm going to be doing. And then you got to, you know, and then like the results are like, okay, this worked or it didn't work. Make an adjustment.
Yep.
And that's the reason why it takes years and years for people to get up, you know, on a high level, because of all that trial and testing that you're doing. And to be honest with you, I don't know about you, but I most of the time didn't come in my best shape. I came in a couple times in my best shape, but to time that and to get it all dialed in, as you know, you can train all the way through your off season pre competition and lose it in that last week. If you mess up your water, I don't know. Do you manipulate water and do that kind of stuff when you're carb load and carb depletion and all that? How fancy do you get with that?
Not too fancy right now. I used to, when I first started out with bodybuilding, I tried the typical, you know, sodium loading, water depletion, back loading and everything. And I found that pretty much keeping everything constant, the same the week of the show. I mean,
yeah. That's smart. Because a lot of people,
I don't mess with my sodium. I keep everything high.
Yeah. Because a lot of people, what happens is at the very end, you know, you keep tweaking it and wanting to make it, and then you start doing things in that last week or that last month that you never did prior to that, and it throws you, shocks your body. Your body doesn't know how to respond to that because it's not used to that.
Exactly.
I think that's what you're saying. I know Platts used to tell me, he goes, think of it as when you're coming into a competition, think of it as an airplane coming in for a landing, a smooth landing instead of a crash landing, because a lot of us crash landed at that very last week. I want to tweak it just a little bit more, get a little bit sharper, and you get the wrong result.
Yep. Happens all the time.
It does, doesn't it?
I see many competitors, they look fantastic a week out from the show, and the day of, they're just awful.
Yeah.
Flat, puffy, not as crisp.
It's so frustrating. You know, so many times that happened to me, it's like a week later, it's like, oh my God, I just hit my peak.
Yep. You know?
But that's part of the sport that for me makes it fascinating, because it's really hard to get all that done to where you're in your best shape for the prejudging. People don't really understand that.
Yeah. Again, there's a lot of information out there and it's just trial and error. I mean, everyone responds differently to different protocols, and you got to be willing to fail a few times before you get it right.
Yeah. And more than a few times from my perspective, you know. Do you think that your being in the military has helped your bodybuilding or vice versa?
Maybe the discipline aspect of it, very regimented. I like following a schedule, a routine. So in those regards, I believe the military has helped instill that into me a little bit more.
Yeah.
But as far as working for the military, you have to be very, very flexible. Again, hours change constantly.
Yeah.
They're long. So you have to be flexible. So it can hinder your, you know, your training and your diet, especially when I'm working night shifts, I get no sleep at all.
Yeah.
I prepared for many shows where I only get like 3-4 hours max sleep.
As you know, that's really tough on your recovery, on your system, you know. Absolutely. You do that for too long and your body, my body shut me down a couple times by just being too exhausted, overtrained, call it what you want. But, you know, it's really difficult, you know, so for you to be able to do that, you know, says something about passion and your will and your drive to do that. I understand, you know, that side of it. And a lot of people just think, again, they just, it's like anything else. You don't realize what all goes into, you know, the end result of what we do.
Yep.
You know, and it's hard to understand that. What's your take or your view on the type of diet that you follow? And is it different off season versus pre-contest? Are you a big protein eater? Things like that. Why don't you give us a little peek about what your diet looks like?
I would say the typical bro diet, where I eat smaller meals more frequently. I try to eat every, you know, 2-3 hours or so. Getting an influx of protein every few hours, staying in an anabolic state. But I don't like elimination diets. I don't like eliminating one macronutrient, like eliminating all carbs or eliminating fats or like keto, going to the extreme. I like to keep everything pretty much balanced, clean, lean source of protein, vegetables, and a slow digesting carb source, basically. Yeah, nothing drastic. That's it, just clean and simple. Off season, of course, my calories are a lot higher, mainly through carbohydrates. Throughout the year, whether I'm pre-contest or off-season, my protein and fats remain relatively the same. I just manipulate my carbohydrate intake.
And why do you do that?
So I like to keep a percentage of, well, carbohydrate intake, because your body doesn't necessarily need carbohydrates. It's just a more preferred source of energy. Mm-hmm. Your body does need protein and it does need fats. For healthy hormone production. Mm-hmm. So to me, I have to have protein and fats. That remains constant. Carbohydrates, you don't necessarily need. It's just energy. It's calories. So if I want to gain weight, lose weight, I'll manipulate my carbohydrate intake. That's it. Protein and fats remain relatively the same.
Let's take a quick pause to tell you about something you're definitely going to want.
Do you want a bone-crushing grip? Good, because you're gonna get one with the amazing new TRS Gripper. It's a progressive grip builder with longer handles and a special ergonomic design that's like a dozen hand grippers in one. Start off easy and work your way up to quickly build your grip strength from wet noodle to pulverizing. The package includes a video from the world-famous strength coach, Dr. Russ Horine, the man who worked with Leo Costa to help bring you Big Beyond Belief in the Bulgarian Power Burst. Dr. Horine shows you a simple and easy to follow workout plan that takes just minutes a day right from in front of your TV set if you want. So click on the link below and let's get started building you a stronger, firmer, bone-crushing grip.
So how many grams of protein do you take per 1 pound of body weight?
So per pound of body weight, I like to keep it anywhere between 1.15 to 1.25. I don't like going too high. And again, it depends on whether I'm off season or pre-contest. Pre-contest, I'll keep it towards the higher range, 1.25. And then off season, a little bit lower, just because I'm consuming a lot more calories, a lot more carbohydrates.
Yeah.
Protein sparing.
And what's your off-season weight?
I got up there this year, taking this year off. Normally, I'm comfortable at around 180, 185. I shot up to 200 at the beginning of this year. Yeah. COVID has not been kind to me. But yeah, I was a little too uncomfortable at 200 pounds, so I'm actually cutting back a little bit. So I'm sitting at a comfortable 190.
Yeah. And when you're getting ready for your shows, are you the type that does cardio along the way? And if so, how much?
Not too much. I hate cardio. I don't do too much cardio. And the cardio that I do implement is only during pre-contest time. And it roughly, depending on how lean I am, 8 to 12 weeks out, I start implementing cardio. Mm-hmm. I like LISS, low intensity, steady state. I'll just hop on the treadmill, fasted in the mornings. That's not necessary, but that's just something I like to do.
Yeah.
As I wake up, I hop on the treadmill, And low intensity, steady state, it's just a fast walk.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm not running, I'm not sprinting, I'm not doing high intensity interval training.
Right.
Low and steady.
You'd be surprised how many guys do moderate cardio. I know they talk a lot about HIIT training and stuff like that, but I find, you know, I'm down at Gold's Gym all the time, still a member at Venice, and I've watched it over the years, and I've watched a lot of the guys, and they still believe in moderate cardio just for the sake of sparing muscle, period.
Yeah, and that's primarily the reason that I do it. I know, like, HIIT training that a lot of people like to do right now, that's way too much for me. That's way too taxing on the body. My weight training is my HIIT training.
Yeah.
That's my high intensity training right there.
Do you train pretty quickly, or do you take like 2 minute rests in between sets? What's your training look like that way?
I would say I keep the intensity pretty high, very short rest periods. Mm-hmm. Just enough to catch my breath and get right back into another set.
Yeah. I think for bodybuilding purposes, you need to train that way. You know, when you're training for strength, then obviously you take 2-3 minute breaks in between for that recovery. But as a bodybuilder, you know, you should actually train at a quicker pace. That creates its own intensity just by doing that. Because what's your rep scheme?
The typical 8 to 12 rep range. But I do a lot of warm-up sets, I find.
Why is it?
I don't know. I feel more comfortable doing a lot more warm-up sets, get the motion down of the exercise that I'm performing. Mm-hmm. I like to build up, so I pyramid the weight up every set. It helps just warm everything up and get the blood flow. And then typically my working sets, I mean, I'll do anywhere between 3 to 5 warm-up sets.
Mm-hmm.
Just to make sure, you know, I got that mind-muscle connection.
Right.
Then my working sets are 3 to 4 working sets, and that's typically between 8 to 12 reps.
Yeah.
My warm-up sets are anywhere between 15 to 25 reps. Right. Very light. Just get the blood in there.
You know, there's a lot of ways to skin a cat, and there's a lot of ways to train a body. You know, I've talked with lots of people over the years, and it's fascinating to listen to people and their own way that they like to train themselves. Because let me tell you what I learned that was a pretty big shock to me back in the late 80s. I went to Bulgaria, and I learned probably the most gaining muscle in a country that's known, that dominated in those years in Olympic competition. They didn't have bodybuilders out there doing competitions because I asked them that. They had all this information, but nobody was a bodybuilder over there, because back in those days when it was socialistic for those countries, that was their way. Olympic training, Olympic lifting, to be an Olympic athlete over there was like a rock star, and they got to travel where nobody else in the country did. So that's how they all gravitated towards Olympic training. But my point is, they taught me over there about that doing warm-up sets is a waste of energy, which shocked me, because they said, you teach your body what you want it to do. The body becomes its function. You can make it ready on the spot. And I have to tell you, I was amazed at that information, because I was just like what you're talking about. I do some warm-ups and then I do my working sets. That's very familiar lingo in the industry. But I got to tell you, I decided to take their advice when I got back. And for me, it was a game changer. Because I did that. You can't do that overnight. You have to, because you've trained your body now to where it needs those warm-up sets before you get into the working set. Your body is becoming its function. It's adapting to the environment that you're providing, the stimulus that you're providing it. And so to come and all of a sudden just be able to get on underneath the bench press, for example, and put 315 on or 405 for your first set and crank it out. And I did it. It took me about maybe 2 or 3 months to train my body to be ready for the first set. And for me, it was a total game changer. I guess my point that I'm making is that not one way is better than the other.
Oh, yeah.
You know, physiologically, you can make your points, but it still comes down to what works better for William at the end of the day, you know? And that's important. I think it's valuable information.
Yeah, and again, it goes back to trial and error, but I've tried many different training protocols. I've done Neil Hill's Y3T training, which I saw good results with and I enjoyed, but definitely a different training style than what I'm used to. Dorian Yates, I did this past year. Very intense.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I had a fellow competitor down in Australia, Josh Sinclair. He introduced me to that style of training. But again, he does one, maybe two warm-up sets, and then just one all out.
Yeah. You remember a guy's name, Mike Mincer?
Yep, of course.
Dorian was kind of it was an evolution. Mike, I got to know Mike really well back in those days, and he was about heavy duty, if you remember that style of training. Very similar to the Dorian Yates style of training, you know, and I tried that. I found that that kind of training for me, I started getting a lot of joint pain over time.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I haven't experienced that. I've been on the program for maybe 6 months.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't experienced any joint pains yet.
Yeah.
But
this is Dorian's style training that you're talking about?
Which is like an evolution of Mentor's program.
Yeah.
Just high intensity, one all out set.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it. It was definitely intense.
Yeah, no question about that. The interesting thing too about Mike and Dorian, what they didn't tell you in the magazines, again, unless you're around those guys, they actually did more volume than they talked about. You know, what made them unique was obviously heavy duty and Dorian style of training. Not that they didn't train with that low reps, they did, but they did more volume than they talked about, because you know that's everybody's doing volume really, because volume training is actually more specific to adding muscle than heavy lifting is. Heavy lifting is more specific to adding strength, and the secondary benefit is adding muscle. That's physiology, you know. So they did some of that too, but I would have thought by reading the magazines that they just did that, you know, Casey Beater was another one that was just all out, you know, for these very few sets and negatives and positives. And I don't know, man, for those, yeah, like you said, that's pretty intense stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But I'm sure they incorporate a lot more volume than.
You know, you never know the whole story, especially when you're reading magazines, that's for sure. You know, that's just the way it goes. Yeah. When you become a student of the game, like I am, like you are, you know that, and you just keep learning. There's so much to keep learning if you're open to that, you know. And then of course, if you're not afraid to be the guinea pig at the end of the day, then you get it. And again, I know when somebody really knows their stuff, when they're not so close-minded that they think there's only one way, you know, to skin that cat or to put on muscle or to eat, because it's not that way.
No, absolutely not. And I've implemented a lot of those, you know, training principles into my own training.
Yeah.
You can pick and choose.
Yeah. That's what's cool about it. You make it your own.
Yep, exactly.
It makes it authentic to you. Okay. So what's on your, now with this COVID thing going on, what's on your schedule? What's in your future as far as competing is concerned? Is there like a certain, do you want to win the Olympian like 10 more times? Or what is it that you're going to do now with yourself, with training, with competing? Where does it go from here for you?
Well, after last year's Olympia, I've already made the decision that I was going to take this year off. Just to try to make those minor improvements that I need, put on a little bit more mass. And you just need a break. You can't keep your body up year after year. So before this whole COVID thing, I already made the decision I was going to take the rest of this year off. Mm-hmm. So I picked a good year.
No kidding.
But it's making it a lot more difficult for like a number of my clients and just everyone that's competing to compete this year, because a lot of shows are either being rescheduled or canceled. A lot of them are being canceled. So they have to be very, very flexible. I mean, shows are being canceled like a week out from
brutal.
Yep, that's rough. You're all ready to go and then just done.
Yeah.
So right now this year, I am judging. I am a head judge for the INBA. There's a show this coming weekend, actually, the 25th. So I'll be head judging that, and I have a number of clients competing in that as well.
So how are they getting around this? To be able to, is it all outside or something?
Yes, it's an outside venue. And again, they're limiting the amount of people that are allowed to attend.
Yeah.
So really, it's just the competitors that are going to be at the venue.
Yeah.
I don't know if they've actually established this yet, but they were talking about, so friends and family can watch, streaming it online.
Oh, okay. And where's it being held?
It's going to be in Corona.
Oh, okay. I originally had set up, because after I did the Vegas show, I set up to do some of these events. But when this happened, I just kind of like poo-pooed it all because it was so uncertain. But what's her name? Nora? Is she the one that puts on that competition? Reynoso?
Yeah, Reynoso. Nora Reynoso.
Yeah.
She does a number of competitions. She sets up a number of competitions in Southern California. I don't know.
One of them.
Yeah, she's probably helping out. I don't know if she's actually the main.
Okay. Yeah, I also had her on the show. You said you have clients. So you have clients that you work with to help get on stage?
Yep. So I'm a contest prep coach, just years of experience, and I try to help other athletes out. I have a number of competitors all around the world, actually. And I got one competitor coming in for this weekend's competition from Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Last competitor. On point, looking phenomenal. And he's going to.
Are they all in the same category, the physique?
Nope. I train clients in many different categories. So I got a lot of bikini competitors, actually. So I get hit up a lot by females to train them.
Uh-huh.
And then I have classic physique competitors, bodybuilders. It doesn't matter.
The whole nine yards.
Whole nine yards. Train them all.
Who's easier or who's harder to train, men or women?
Women are definitely harder to train.
Yeah, they are, aren't they?
There's an excuse for everything, I feel like. And also, they're dealing with a lot more as well, hormone issues. But yeah, they're so much more difficult to train. Guys, they'll shut up and listen, and they'll do what you tell them.
Yeah, no, it's a whole different ball game, man. Because I've done the same thing. I've trained the, different women and the men, and whew, especially towards the end, it gets goofy.
Yeah, it does. Absolutely. So yeah,
I would say, this is the last time I'm going to be doing this. You know, I don't think I like that much drama. I mean, I'm dramatic and I have my own issues. I'll admit to that, but I don't know. That thing went to a level where I thought, no, I don't want to do that very long, that's for sure.
Oh, absolutely not. But I keep getting hit up by other bikini competitors that want me to train. It's surprising. I got more female clients than I do male clients.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that. I still have a training studio. I've had studios, personal training studios for over the years that I've been, I still have one. And when I first started my studio back in 82, in the town that I was in, it was a small town, and just kind of the mindset back then, women were afraid to go to the gym and lift weights because they thought they were going to turn out like Arnold Schwarzenegger. And that's not an exaggeration. You know, I even had someone, I do the consultation, I said, well, have you ever weight trained? Yeah, but I quit. I said, why? She said, because in 3 months' time, I got so big, I could hardly fit in my bra. And I'm thinking, okay, if it's muscle, I want the program that you're on because that's impossible.
Exactly. You know?
And so the point is a whole different mindset. But as it turned out, as the years went on, my clientele is primarily female. I would say 70%, 30% men. And I think, on the other hand, as dramatic as they were in the situation with the competitors, I think that women actually have a better work ethic overall than the men do. And I think it has something to do with childbearing. That's just my opinion.
Possibly.
Because they stick with it longer, it seems like.
Yeah, I see that. Absolutely.
You know, and more committed that way.
I know a lot of very hardcore females.
Yeah. No, yeah. Some of them are real gritty. I'll give you that. That's for sure. I guess it's just like, look, competing, as and when you get to that point, it makes everybody crazy.
Yeah.
When you're, day out or when you, it's a nightmare, especially when you're really new to the game. I remember my first competition I did, first few, it's like I didn't even remember being on stage, going through my posing routine. I was so freaked out,
Yeah.
And yet, I don't know about you, the longer I was in it, and the game slowed down, that's when I really started enjoying that process, you know, because you could really play to the crowd and have fun with that.
Yep.
And it was a lot better to have fun with it than it being just a total nightmare. But I think, again, you just have to go through, it's a process to get to that point.
You got to have that experience. Absolutely.
Yeah. Listen, before we go here, is there on this show, would you like to promote, you got clients, is there anything that you'd like to promote, like on your Instagram or website or anything for what you're doing?
Sure. Yeah. People can follow me on Instagram at ricecracker2487. I'm very open. You can direct message me, comment on my photos, and I tend to reply right away. If anyone's interested in coaching, just direct message me and we'll see what we can do. And I like to promote the show that's coming this weekend. It's for a good cause. It's the Battle Against Cancer show. So proceeds from the show go to cancer research. It's one of the largest shows of the year, but this COVID thing has been messing things up.
Yeah.
But looking forward to it. It's the first show of the year. We normally have shows back in March.
In fact, I think this was one of the first ones, right, in March. It seems like, yeah, on my calendar, this one was in March at some point.
Yeah, originally this was supposed to be around March, April timeframe.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just got pushed up. This date was supposed to be another pro show.
Right.
We swapped it out.
Yeah.
It's the first show of the year. I'm looking forward to it, and I'll be head judging. And I wish all the competitors luck. And wish my clients luck, but I know they're going to kill it. They look phenomenal and they've just been on point. So
nice. Well, listen, I appreciate you taking the time out to come on the show and letting us get to know who you are. And I wish you a lot of luck in everything that you're doing and continued success.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
All right, man. We'll talk soon. Maybe we'll cross paths one day.
Yeah, that'd be good.
All right. You take care of yourself.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.